Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In a remote tract of the Ecuadorian jungle, there is a huge toxic mess caused by years of oil drilling. That may be the only fact that is not in dispute in an epic lawsuit being fought in a remote courthouse in the Amazon. How much the toxic waste has harmed the people and the environment, whether oil giant Chevron is responsible for the cleanup, whether this case has become a political football in Washington, and whether it could set a global precedent, it's all in play. This hour On Point, an epic legal battle over oil and justice in the Amazon. You can join our conversation. Have you heard about the Lago Agrio lawsuit? Is this a case of David versus Goliath, or a group of American trial lawyers out to fleece an American corporation? Joining me first from Houston is Isabel Ordonez. She covers Chevron, Exxon, and ConocoPhillips for Dow Jones Newswire and The Wall Street Journal. The first of a three-part series on Chevron and the Lago Agrio lawsuit is out today. Isabel, nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
So a lot of people have never heard of this case, Isabel, although it's been in the court for years. Take us into the heart of it. Where did this all begin?
Well, yes, this case actually started in 1993 when indigenous lawyers of indigenous groups living in Ecuador's Amazon jungle filed a suit in New York, and they demand and they say that Texaco, a company that Chevron bought in 2001, have destroyed the jungle there. The Texaco was in Ecuador from 1964 to 1992 when they exited the country. But most of the time that the company was there, it did it along with Petroecuador, that is the national oil company of Ecuador.
Petroecuador, right, the government-owned oil company.
Exactly.
So the real issue here is the so-called formation water. What is that and why is that important?
Well, it is important because that is actually the center of the dispute. When Texaco arrived there and they start extracting oil, they had a mechanism that extract the oil, and the water that came out from the ground along with the oil and also some waste was deposited in some open pits. So there are huge holes that have millions of gallons of black water with oil waste. And so they start doing that, and also, and when Petroecuador joined them in pretty early, they keep doing both the same thing over the years. And actually, Petroecuador did the same thing even after Texaco left the country in 1992. They stopped doing that a few years ago, actually, after the claim was filed in New York.
So the claim is that water that's left over from when crude oil is taken from these underground wells, the allegation is that contaminated water was dumped into unlined sort of open pits, as you call them, that fed the rivers and the streams in the Amazon.
Well, yes. Those are, as I say, kind of a big pond full of water, and that water is there. But they have a pipeline that let some water filter into the jungle, the surrounding jungle, and also when it rains, and it rains a lot there, it actually gets filtered to the rivers and to the stream water. Mm.
And so activists describe the result of that and this rainforest contamination as an Amazon Chernobyl. Is that an accurate characterization as far as the health effects of the people in the rainforest?
That is a phrase that was used by an expert plaintiff, the lawyers of the indigenous hired in 2003, and he went there, and he is a U.S. expert, and he went there and saw the contamination, spent, I think, a week, and then he talked about that. Most recently, he have changed his mind. He said that the contamination is not that severe. So it is big. the contamination is there. And it's also important to note that Petroecuador have actually, in the last two couples of years, actually have closed several of the pits, and so there are less and less of these ones. But plaintiffs say that although they are covering the pits, and Chevron also did that when they were there, Texaco did that when they were there, what is under that covers is still contaminated. So they say that although they are covering that, is not well done, and that oil waste underneath is still filtering to the jungle. Mm.
Isabel Ordonez, reporter for the Dow Jones Newswire, thanks for the update here at the beginning of the program. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
Isabel Ordonez is a reporter for the Dow Jones Newswire. She joined us from Houston. I'd like to introduce two guests at this point, one on each side of this bitter legal battle. Joining us from Huntington Beach, California, is Sylvia Garrigo. She is manager of global issues and policy for Chevron and was formerly senior counsel for the oil company. She's worked on the Ecuador case since the beginning. Nice to have you with us, Ms. Garrigo.
Thank you, Jane.
And from New York, we are joined by Stephen Donziger. He is an advisor to the legal team representing the plaintiffs in the lawsuit, Aguinda versus Texaco Chevron. He's worked on this for the past 15 years, and he says he's traveled to Ecuador over 100 times for this case and made it something of a personal cause. Nice to have you, Mr. Donziger.
Thanks for having me.
So why don't you start us out here, Stephen, and tell us, you've traveled to Ecuador, as I said, many times, over 100 times, to the rainforest, to this area of contamination, alleged contamination. How would you describe the impact of the people of Ecuador?
I'd say it's apocalyptic. I mean, if you go down there, you have an area about the size of Rhode Island filled with almost 1,000 of these toxic waste pits. There's two fundamental problems. One is these pits that Isabella described at the top of the show. The other is the dumping of the water of formation, which contains carcinogens such as benzene. Texaco, instead of reinjecting these substances into the ground like was being done in the United States at the time, was just dumping them directly into Amazon waterways. And they did this for a period of 2.5 decades. And at the height of the operation, they were dumping 4 million gallons a day of these toxic substances into these waterways that indigenous groups that have been living there for millennia had relied on for their livelihood and to survive. And what's happened over time is that the indigenous groups are slowly unable to use the forest, and their populations have declined severely. Cancer rates are skyrocketing because people don't have access to clean water. The pits themselves, even the ones that are covered, have been covered by Texaco or subsequently by Petroecuador, are still leaching toxins into the groundwater below the pits, which people also rely on for drinking water because they build groundwater wells to get water. It's a public health catastrophe, and I think it's important to point out that the decisions to do this and the exclusive operation of the 378 wells and separation stations over this 2.5 decades were in the hands of Texaco alone.
Well, let me turn to Texaco and get an initial response here. Sylvia Garrigo, Chevron has been ordered to pay up to $16 billion in damages at this point by an Ecuadorian court. How does Chevron characterize this case?
Well, Chevron has consistently characterized this case as a judicial fraud. Isabel mentioned that this case began in 1990 in New York, where a group of lawyers began a purported class action suit against the company for shirking its environmental responsibility to the people of Ecuador. And really nothing could be farther than the truth. Texaco did have an 18-year partnership with Petroecuador, the state-owned oil company. But once the government decided in 1990 that it did not want to continue an oil consortium with Texvent, the government hired HBT Agra, a renowned Canadian firm, to conduct an environmental audit of the consortium area.
And what did they find?
The audit concluded very clearly that Texpet followed internationally accepted industry practices and Ecuadorian law in connection with the operation of the consortium. And while there were impacts related to the operations, which are impossible to avoid, such impacts were isolated and confined. In other words, these impacts were remediable.
Stephen Dunzinger, how do you respond to that?
Well, that's just not true. I mean, the HBT Agri report actually condemns Texaco for their practices, talks about enormous impacts on the environment. What it doesn't do, since it was paid by Texaco, is really spell out the extensive remediation that would need to be done to really fix the problem. But, you know, what's interesting about that, just like it's interesting in the trial that we've been going through in the last 5 years, you know, there's been 94 of these sites of the 378 that have been inspected by either both parties or a court-appointed independent expert. And the expert, who's an impartial person who worked with 15 other scientists, found that 100% of these sites had levels of toxins in violation of Ecuadorian law, which is more lax than the United States. Chevron, unfortunately, refuses to acknowledge the fundamental proof in the case. This is a trial. And we can go back and forth about this, that, and the other thing. The reality is there's proof in the court. And by the way, Isabella, or at the top of your intro, the judge has not ruled yet on this. The $16 billion figure comes from the special master who's recommended a damages assessment to the court. So the case is still going on, but the reality is he has acknowledged after reviewing all the evidence that there's still a major, major, major problem regardless of earlier environmental reports. Hmm.
My guests are Stephen Dunzinger, a member of the legal team representing the plaintiffs in the lawsuit Aguinda versus Texaco Chevron, and Sylvia Garrigo, a top lawyer for Chevron who's also worked on this case since the beginning. Before the break, Stephen Dunzinger mentioned the oil company's drilling practices, and I'd like you to respond to that, Sylvia Garrigo. What were the drilling practices, and were they different? Was there a different standard applied in the Amazon than in the United States? Were there drilling practices employed in the rainforest that would have never been acceptable here in the United States?
The audit firmly and clearly concluded, James, that TexPet followed internationally accepted practices not only in its drilling, but also in the so-called pits that Mr. Dunzinger is referring to. Mr. Dunzinger also refers to the evidence presented by their experts demonstrating Chevron's culpability. But as Isabel correctly pointed out, one of those experts who called the area a Chernobyl has recently recanted on several occasions his statements, saying that his examination of the area was cursory, was not based on taking laboratory samples, as one is required to do to make these types of assertions. And the expert that is now working with the court, Mr. Cabrera, is an environmental activist, which was chosen and handpicked by the NGO which is leading this case and appointed by the court in violation of previous court orders. Now,
let me ask you this. Does Chevron believe that it has fully complied with the government-approved cleanup plan? I mean, to you, is this a simple contract dispute that really the blame lies with some sort of antiquated oil production technology used by the government-owned Petro Ecuador company, and you're just sort of caught in the middle here, the big pockets, deep pockets that are left paying the bill? Is that your stand?
It is not only, Jane, a contractual issue, but Texaco and Chevron take their environmental responsibilities very seriously. When the consortium was completed, TexPet spent over $40 million in an environmental remediation program, which was done under close inspection by the government, where they took lab samples of the areas to determine whether TexPet complied with the remediation standards that were set not only by the government of Ecuador, but by the state oil company in Petro Ecuador.
Let me turn to Stephen Dunzinger to respond to all this. Chevron says it's being targeted for its deep pockets. Stephen, there's a political component
Chevron,
here.
Chevron's being targeted because it did this. I mean, you know, Sylvie has not disputed, nor can she, that Texaco was the exclusive operator of a consortium that dumped 18 billion gallons of toxic waste into the Amazon and built 1,000 toxic waste pits. You know, previous audits paid for by Texaco are irrelevant. What's relevant now is the proof in the court and this independent court-appointed expert who was not handpicked by the plaintiffs, who was appointed by a judge. This is an individual who had worked as an expert in the case earlier, and Chevron never objected and even paid half of his fee. So, you know, Chevron wants to blame everybody but themselves. The reality is they're being sued because they did this. If they feel another entity is responsible, they can try to figure out how to collect money from that other entity. But the reason Chevron is being sued is because it bought Texaco, and Texaco, you know, committed what is essentially a human rights atrocity in the rainforest.
Can you give us a sense, Stephen? You've been to Ecuador over 100 times. Give us a sense of what these courtroom scenes have looked like down there in the middle of the rainforest.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating and interesting. And anyone who sort of watches it gets enthralled by it. And basically, you have what's called field inspections, where the judge takes the lawyers and technical experts from both sides out into the field, and these well sites are examined. These are the soil and water samples. There's been about 70,000 of them produced, which is an extraordinarily huge quantum of evidence from both sides in this trial. And they're produced that show contamination in each and every one of these sites, including sites that Texaco claims to have remediated. The court-appointed expert also found no difference between the levels of toxins at sites that had supposedly been remediated and those that had not. There was really no remediation. It was a sham from our point of view. But the trial itself is coming to an end. I will say that I believe Chevron's defense posture is that the trial never end. It's to delay this as much as possible. This has been going on for 15 years. And during that time, and I've been there dozens and dozens of times, I've seen tremendous amount of suffering, cancers, people who live near the oil fields who are drinking toxic laden water because they have no other option because of these operations, who have fallen sick and can't even have money to get to a hospital.
Sylvia, let me turn to you on that point, because I have read several independent academic studies that have found cancer rates in this area of contamination up to four times higher in the allegedly in these areas. So my question to you, though, Sylvia, let me ask you this. Even if Chevron sees no financial responsibility, is there some sort of moral responsibility in regard to these indigenous people?
Well, Jane, it's always amazing for me to hear Mr. Dossinger claim that we have contaminated waters and that that contamination has contributed to health impacts in the Oriente. In over 48 inspections that Mr. Dossinger is referring to, and 3 years, their so-called experts took only 13 water samples in the entire consortium area. Mm. And all of their 13 water samples came out completely free of hydrocarbons.
Is that true, Stephen Dossinger?
That's not true at all. I mean,
Go ahead and finish, Sylvia.
Can I finish, please? He also claims that the remediation was not completed correctly, which also amazes me because there is documentary evidence signed and sealed by the government in Petrocodor, which includes a photographic journal of remediation work that was done on a step-by-step basis to clean all of these pits that were identified by the government of Ecuador, taking into consideration TexPET's 37.5% share of the consortium, and taking into consideration that Petrocodor wanted to continue operating the area and still continues to operate. Mm. So whenever we see any contamination, any oil sludge, what we are seeing is the remaining balance of the consortium area that Petroecuador has not yet remediated according to its obligation as a consortium owner and today as an exclusive operator.
Let me jump in here, Sylvia, because I have so many people that are lined up to join our conversation, and I want to get a few of them in here now with some additional thoughts. Jeff is on the line from Toronto, Canada. Jeff, go ahead. Welcome.
Yes, hi, hola. This seems to me to be a clear case of criminal negligence, and sorry if I sound a bit biased, but I'm an environmentalist, and I've been to the region. The case of the Texaco, Ecuador story reminds me of a similar situation of a Canadian company called Encana, which had an OCP pipeline which burst, and there was a terrible toxic cesspool that developed as a result of the spill, and high cancer rates were attributed to the event as well, as your guest pointed out. So basically, I think many investors as well are watching this, those who are socially responsible, that is, to see how this case turns out, because many of us who have pension funds would like to see the oil industry clean up its act, so to speak.
Jeff, thank you. Let me turn to Sylvia and ask for a response. Sylvia?
I'm always amazed how any environmental activist can point to Chevron when there's clear evidence that it complied with its remediation program and that it met accepted industry practice all over the world in conducting its operations. Yet they never, ever mention the fact that Petrocodor has a notorious poor environmental performance, which is well documented. Since 1990, Jane, Petroecuador has admittedly spilled over 4.4 million gallons of oil in the area. Its own energy minister has acknowledged that for over 30 years, Petroecuador has done, and I'm quoting, absolutely nothing to remediate the pits under its responsibility.
Jump in, Stephen. Go ahead.
Yeah, I look, you know, no one's going to defend Petroecuador, but we have to remember that Petroecuador inherited a system that Chevron built, and a system that was designed to pollute in order to save money. Petroecuador needs to clean up its act. But ultimately, Petroecuador is not responsible for the pollution that Chevron did between 1964 and 1992, nor, in our mind, is it responsible for the pollution it is causing using Texaco's old system that was created in violation of industry standards and laws that existed at the time it was created. And that's a critically important point. And with regard to what the caller said, you know, Chevron, and I really believe their public relations strategy and legal strategy is part of this. They are trying to keep these facts from their shareholders. It is shocking that suddenly there appears potentially a $16 billion liability, which is almost 1 year of profits for this company. And they never disclosed this issue to shareholders until a few weeks ago. And, you know, Chevron has some major corporate governance issues, in my mind, that it needs to take up. You know, it has a choice to make as a company. I know Chevron's leadership wants to do the right thing environmentally. They inherited this problem from Texaco. They pay lawyers and public relations people to try to defend it. But in the end of the day, people are dying in Ecuador.
Stephen, let me jump in because I want to bring another voice into this conversation to give us a bit of balance here. Kelly Hearn is a staff writer for The Washington Times. He was based for 4 years in Buenos Aires, Argentina, covering Latin American affairs. And with funding from the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting, he had reported extensively on Amazonian oil and gas issues for The Washington Times, The Washington Post, and the Christian Science Monitor. He first began reporting on the Lago Agrio story in 2005. Welcome to you, Kelly. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jane.
Lots of back and forth here. A lot of details, a lot of complexity. You've been covering this case for years. Get us out of the weeds. Help us understand why this is such a bellwether case.
Well, I would definitely not try to get in the middle of two intelligent lawyers who have been on such a sophisticated case that's full of scientific data and full of nuances and being conducted in a country that has a judicial system that is certainly unaccustomed to handling a case of this magnitude. So to try to give you a treetop level of what this case could mean, however it goes, I will say that legal experts across the board have told me that this litigation is terribly important. If Chevron loses the case, there will be a historic precedent that will be set and that will put oil companies on notice. Historically, oil companies that have worked in the Amazon have committed excesses and neglects, and they have been able to hide in the Amazon's remoteness. And that's changing today, and it's changing for several reasons, one of which is you have cases like this case. You have cases like Doe versus Unical that in 2005 forced the California-based oil company into a settlement after it was sued for collaborating with Burmese military personnel in the torture and murder of Burmese villagers. You have another case, Bowoto versus Chevron, which is pending, and I've written in the Washington Post this year about the Peruvian Achuar people who are suing Occidental Petroleum for alleged environmental and health damages in Peru's oil-rich northern Amazon. So the point of all this is this. As Peru and Ecuador understandably take advantage of high energy prices and go after the oil and gas loads in their pristine Amazon, you're going to run into human rights problems, and you're going to run into problems where poor people, very simple people who don't understand the ways of the modern world, are going to find themselves face to face with the world's most powerful industry. And the question becomes, how in the face of evidence that Stephen has mentioned, evidence such as cancer and strange illnesses, these sorts of things that are clearly linked, in my mind, having seen these sites, a number of sites throughout the Amazon and six trips to the Amazon, how can these people fight back? And this case stands out as a potential bar setter for ways that poor people can fight back. This comes as international NGOs are working with natives, teaching them how to use, for example, global positioning systems to help keep companies in check. So in closing, I would say, however this case goes, it is extremely important for setting precedent, and it gives hope to so many people that I've interviewed on the street, so many people, but not only nativos or Indians or poor colonists, people who have nothing, that live on less than $2 a day. This case gives them hope that they can have some sort of justice.
Kelly Hearn, thanks. I want to take a call here from Troy, who has an interesting point from Iowa City, Iowa. Troy, welcome to On Point.
Welcome. I got a quick question for the lawyer who's representing those poor people of Ecuador. How much money are you going to take? What is your percentage? How much money are you going to make?
Troy, thank you. Stephen Donzinger, how much is in this for you? What's at the heart? What's your motivation here?
Well, personally, I'm a human rights lawyer. I've been working on this for 15 years with no compensation. The only way to do these types of cases is to get private financing, because Chevron's whole strategy is to exhaust the plaintiffs so they don't have the resources to last all of these years. We're extremely well financed, and the arrangement that the lawyers who are financing the case have is that they will take a very modest percentage of the legal fees, which is completely consistent with how all sorts of cases are done throughout the United States and world, and it's the only way to do these kinds of cases, and the lawyers are quite proud of it, and you know, just like Chevron makes $20 billion a year, the lawyers who work on this case, if there is an outcome where the plaintiffs win, they expect to get their legal fees paid for, as they should.
And that's
Jane,
that's it? No percentage beyond that?
Well, no. There's a very modest percentage, which is significantly lower than the norm in the United States.
Kelly Hearn, go ahead.
A modest percentage over what they claim is $16 billion, and that's what they're after, Jane, very clearly.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the landmark lawsuit now being fought between Chevron and the plaintiffs and lawyers who want that energy company to pay for the cleanup of the toxic dumps in eastern Ecuador in the rainforest there. My guests are Stephen Donzinger, a lawyer who has worked on this case since the beginning and made it his personal mission, Sylvia Garrigo, a top lawyer for Chevron who has defended her company against the Lago Agrio lawsuit also since the beginning, and Kelly Hearn, a staff writer for The Washington Times who's followed this story closely going back to 2005. Sylvia Garrigo, I want to give you a chance to respond. I had to cut you short before the break. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Jane. Mr. Kern did say it's a historical case, but we believe it's historical for many different reasons. Insofar as paying more than our fair share of cleanup costs and otherwise as I mentioned before, TxVet conducted a $40 million remediation program. And there are pictures demonstrating the effectiveness of that remediation program along with certifications by the government of Ecuador. Now, in terms of the historical nature of this case, I tell you, Jane, in the 20 years that I have been working in Latin America, I have never seen a case where the president of the country goes out to the site hand in hand with the plaintiffs and profess his support for plaintiff's case against Chevron, vowing, and I'm pretty much quoting, to help them collect evidence against Chevron, and promising that anyone who upholds the validity of the release and remediation agreement approved by a former administration will be held criminally liable. Now, if there is no judge in that country that can exercise objectivity and independence and give Chevron a fair and impartial trial under these circumstances.
Let me turn to Kelly Hearn on that point, because I'd like to get his sort of unbiased journalistic perspective. Is there politics here, plain and simple, as Sylvia is referring to?
Well, as unbiased as a human being can be, I'll try to share what I think. Politics are happening both in Washington and in Ecuador. President Correa is an American trained economist. He's a leftist. He's a populist. And he did, while running for office, refer to the case. I didn't see that exact quote that the Chevron attorney mentioned. But I will say that, yes, it's part of a populist package that President Correa used when coming to office. But anyone who pays attention to Latin American politics knows that something someone says, or pays attention to politics anywhere really, something that someone says on the campaign trail will not necessarily mean that will be turned into presidential action. So because he made an off-the-cuff statement while running for office, certainly in my mind doesn't lead me to believe that he was going to eject or somehow punish any judge that sides with the state against Chevron.
Let me go to another point here from our caller, Salim, who's on the line from Burlington, Vermont. Salim, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I'm just wondering why Chevron is not willing to take this on basically as a public relations expense, because they're doing so much advertising in terms of their social responsibility. Increasingly, I've done some research in this area, and many companies are willing to take on expenses from past grievances for that very purpose. For example, the Raglan mine in northern Quebec, the company there, Falcon Bridge, which has now been bought by Xstrata, they cleaned up an asbestos mine, which they had nothing to do with, just to establish a better rapport with the indigenous community there. So I think we're living in a world of tremendous inequality. We're trying to deal with legacy issues of the past, and just, you know, focusing on legal semantics is not necessarily going to build a better future for either Chevron or for these communities.
Salim,
so
thank
I'm
you for the call. I want to turn to Sylvia and let you respond. It's a good point Salim makes. Why not Chevron just do the right thing and pay for it and clean it up?
Your Honor, Jane, I have, our general counsel has gone on record many, many times that we are not going to succumb to an extortion against the company. We have paid more than our fair share in terms of our remediation obligations. And if there is a paradigm that we need to change to make this inequality fair, we need to focus on the real culprit of the contamination conducted in the area, which is conducted by Petroecuador. I have been to the Amazon many, many times. I have met many folks who have applauded and have been very complimentary about Texaco's legacy in the country. And when they ask me why I'm there, these are residents of the areas that are impacted by Petroecuador. I tell them that we have been accused of leaving these pits, and they basically, their response is, I don't know why they're asking you to clean it up when Petroecuador is just going to turn around and contaminate it again.
Well, let me ask you this, Sylvia. Newsweek reports this week that Chevron has turned to a powerhouse team of lobbyists, which includes former Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott, to push the Bush administration to revoke special trade preferences for Ecuador based on what's going on down there, on the special master in this case in the Ecuadorian courts. What's your response to that? Is that true?
What Chevron is doing is asserting a position that any company which is being unfairly treated in another country should assert. Under the Andean Trade Preferences Act, no country can qualify for benefits under these acts if it has expropriated property belonging to a U.S. citizen or corporation, or if it has taken steps to repudiate or nullify an existing contract with a U.S. citizen or corporation. And we firmly believe that the Republic of Ecuador has done that. And the statements made by President Correa was not on a campaign trail. It is while he has been president of the country. Not only has he been out to the sites, he has issued press releases.
Jane, I have to jump in here.
Stephen Donziger, go ahead. It's your turn.
This is just simply not true. First of all, there has been no interference by the president of Ecuador in the trial. What Chevron is trying to do, because they're losing the trial, is they're trying to look for anything outside of the process to stop the march of this judicial process to a conclusion. One of the things they're doing is trying to blame the president. The reality is, I've been in this 15 years. There were 10 presidents in Ecuador during the duration of this trial, and almost every single one Chevron went to see and asked them, and in some cases tried to intimidate them into interfering in the trial to kill it, including the very first day of the trial, October 21st, 2003, where the Attorney General of Ecuador, under tremendous pressure from Chevron, called the judge and told him to dismiss the case. What Chevron doesn't like is not interference in the trial. They don't like the fact that their own interference is being rejected by an independent court.
Let me go to the phones again. Melanie is on the line now from Millis, Massachusetts. Hi, Melanie. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, everybody. I come from a Latin American country, too, and I know that in our countries, powerful companies can buy basically anything that they want to buy, and they can shut everybody's mouth, including the presidents of the countries. So I know that this lawyer's job is to defend the company, but at the same time, she needs to understand that what they've done is wrong, and they need to clean their act and get everything the right way.
Melanie, thanks. Here's caller Sylvia, who says this is about money and power. What's your response?
Well, it's really amazing for me to hear Steve say that we are influencing the government when we have clear and unequivocal written communications between their team and the Attorney General of Ecuador, asking, colluding in trying to invalidate the remediation agreement. Please don't interrupt me, Steve. I don't interrupt your comments. They're colluding to invalidate the remediation agreement that was certified and approved by the government of Ecuador. And insofar as our obligations and the comments that we have left Petroecuador with a legacy of bad operations, I believe that that is an insult to the technical capacity of the people of Ecuador, which was admitted by its own energy ministry, energy minister. He said that the serious problem...
Hold on a second.
You know what? I want Kelly Hearn to jump in here. Give us some balance. Kelly, would you please?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to take issue with Sylvia's statement that the Cabrera report or the expert report was somehow commissioned by a non-profit organization. I talked to Judge Herman Yanez, who was one of the judges in the case, around the time that the Cabrera report was coming out, and he told me that the courts did appoint that. So that's one point. The second point is I, too, have talked to many people in Ecuador, and I don't disagree with Sylvia when she says that many people have probably said to her, or have said to her, hey, Chevron did a great job here. I can't believe you're being blamed. But I've talked to very many people who have said, Petroecuador, did they do a bad job? Absolutely. But they also say it started with Texaco, and Texaco is to blame. So I've talked to a lot of people, too, and their message has been different. And finally, I'd like to end on this point. This is the kind of case that invites knee-jerk reaction. Number one, it's easy. Everybody likes to dislike oil companies. But oil companies are the people that I've met that work for oil companies are generally good people. They don't want to see an unclean world. They're not out to intentionally harm the planet or harm other people. Chevron, I think, has under stockholder pressure and probably under its own, the impulses of its managerial board, cleaned up their act over the years. And that's a statement that oil activists have made for me. And I think environmental activists have made to me. And I think that environmental activists should recognize that. On the other hand, callers that call up Steve Donziger and say, how much are you getting in this accusatory way? Well, cases like this don't go by themselves. Lawyers must get paid. And I can tell you this, Pablo Fajardo, who works for the Amazon Defense Front and who Steve Donziger is involved with, is a very well-known and very well-respected Ecuadorian. And he is the face of this case. And people tell me, by and large, that he is a trustworthy man. Ecuadorians that I've met aren't worried about the fact that Steve Donziger is pushing this case so he can line his pockets. So I think there's a need for people to understand that there is middle ground here. But it is the kind of case that invites that sort of knee-jerk reaction and emotional response.
Let me get another couple of calls in here. Tim is on the line from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Tim, go ahead. Welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Hello. I had a comment. I don't really have an opinion one way or the other about which side to take. However, I have heard several callers mention that, look, Chevron's doing well. Perhaps they should pay just out of social consciousness. And I remember a Milton Friedman essay that basically said businesses are there to make money for their stockholders. If their stockholders believe that they should take up social issues, that's one thing. However, business should not do it just because. And I feel like there are some people that believe Chevron, only because they've done well and only because they've grown large and made a profit, should somehow pay for this. Now, if they've done something wrong, that's completely different. Justice should be served. But just because a business, no matter how big it's gotten, has done well, I don't think makes it culpable.
Tim, I appreciate your point. Thanks for calling. Let me get another caller in here, John, who's in Brattleboro, Vermont. John, welcome to you.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. Go ahead.
I want to say I'm a Chevron shareholder, and I'm completely ashamed by their dissembling on this issue. And I would like to know what we can do to force them to clean up the mess and help the people in Ecuador.
John, thank you. Let's see, Sylvia?
I think Jim raises a very important point. We are, as any company in a country, to make a profit, but we make a profit responsibly, ethically, and according to accepted industry practices. Now,
Stephen Donziger, I'm going to let you respond.
Yeah,
I'm running out of time. Go ahead.
Yeah, look, that's just ridiculous. I go back to the proof of the case. This isn't about a social issue. It's not about asking them to do the right thing. It's a simple legal case where people who were harmed deserve to be compensated. The evidence is in. The damage is up to $16 billion. Chevron has to face that reality. Instead of doing that, they're going around Washington trying to enlist the Bush administration to pressure Ecuador. They're trying to, you know, start all sorts of international cases. They've launched a public relations offensive. They're spending tens of millions of dollars trying to defend this case, when in reality, the people down there are suffering, and they never even paid for a single health evaluation of the area. Chevron needs to step up and really start behaving consistent with his environmental rhetoric and behave like a responsible corporation.
Stephen,
and that's really what needs to be done.
Here's the last question that I want to ask both sides. Why doesn't everybody meet halfway here? Just fix the problem. Why don't both sides just come together, try to settle here? Sylvia Garrigo?
You know, Steve mentions that this is about facts and evidence, when their case has never been about facts and evidence or the
Sylvia,
law.
Sylvia, there's 70,000 chemical samples in the trial.
Please.
There's 70,000 chemical
samples.
Sylvia,
go ahead and finish.
And I disagree with her too, Jane. I disagree. I was on a site inspection. I saw the soil samples being taken. I've seen the scientific data. I'm not a scientist, but I can tell you, and I, from talking to the judges involved in this case, that they are serious about it. And if Sylvia wants to ask us to respect the technical expertise of that country, then we must expect the technical and legal expertise of the judges that I've interviewed. It is wrong to say that this is simply a public relations ploy.
Stephen Donziger,
well,
go ahead.
That's what plaintiffs have made this case out to be. And the, Mr. Cabrera, who was appointed by the judge, was appointed after a smear campaign against the judge by the plaintiff's attorney, accusing him of being corrupt
that's
and a traitor to
true.
The company. That is absolutely true, and it's
that's
documented.
Not true. That's and not what, true. Look, Jane, this is
here we go. I have to jump in, and I'm going to say, what about a settlement? Stephen Donziger?
Look, Chevron has a choice. They can either deal with their corporate responsibilities and the fact they have an issue that they inherited from Texaco. No one is saying Chevron did this, but Chevron is now responsible for these horrendous practices that Texaco utilized that dumped billions of gallons of toxic waste into the pristine Amazon rainforest and really is killing vulnerable people. So, yeah, I think Chevron has a choice. They can either step up and deal with this and respect the court and respect the law, or they can keep behaving in a way that they really seem like they're guilty.
Stephen Donziger, appreciate your time today. Advisor to the legal team representing the plaintiffs in this case. Thank you very much. Sylvia Garrigo, joining us from Huntington Beach, California, representing Chevron. My thanks to you, Sylvia. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
And Kelly Hearn, staff reporter for the Washington Times. I appreciate your perspective. Thanks.
Thank you, Jane.
I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.